funded, and I don't believe that Texas is there more in a dues and contribution, so they can bring in.
I believe Maryland's correct, I think they're part of it.
Yeah, they're part, so they're open to anything, we're not.
And maybe we want to limit it to someone who, when I look at it, I think I don't want to have to explain somebody donating $25,000 for this conference. You know, maybe it's a nominal limit, that maybe they are, like you see with the Bar Association, that this break snack is sponsored by so-and-so.
Right, and say I wasn't even thinking $25,000. I mean, I guess maybe there's that kind of money out there, but that's more what I was thinking is.
Right, but we can't get it to a level, and there's lots of good fundraising people out there who can do that.
Sure.
That's why I say that.
Right,
but I don't want to become a group that goes out there seeking funds.
No,
you know.
Right, no. It's. I mean, we are a prosecutor resource, and that's what we need to remain. I'm just, you know, one of my concerns is trying to fund. You know, Ed's grants are pretty stable. Donna's is up in 2 years, and you know, looking for ways to continue to fund Donna, and so. You know, just thinking of all these different
bank
ways
sales.
To
we can have bank sales.
Yeah. Anyway, so what I will do is I'm sure is hopefully by next council. Well, I should by next council meeting, at least have an answer. You know, the ethical side, the agency side. You know, all of that, and so I can come back and let you know. But that's something that I wanted to look at. Okay. John R. Justice. That's the other thing that has been consuming my time these last couple of weeks. Is just, as you're aware, we had 50 applicants, 15 were public defenders, 35 were prosecutors. We had $56,000, just a little bit over to disperse. The awards ranged from a little over $1,800 down to nothing. There were two applicants that the review committee and their membership is down there that they looked at and determined that there were two prosecutors that their salaries were substantial enough and their law school debt had been reduced enough that they didn't feel that an award was merited. So two out of the 50 did not get an award. Just so you're aware, next year, if it's funded again, Utah has only been appropriated $31,000, so it's gonna continue to go down. Since the last board meeting, I've met with the following county attorneys. I've actually gone down to their offices. I try to do it in conjunction with when I'm traveling. Hopefully I'm going to get to the rest of you over the course of the next couple of months. Really great visits, and so I'll just leave it at that. I wanted to give an update on the UPC's Google forum that we had started as of last Thursday when I counted. We had 18 topics that had been discussed, 56 people had posted, and we'd had 251 views on all the various topics. So I think it's really been a big success. When I was talking, to join, as we put in the newsletter, if you haven't joined, and we'd really encourage you to do so, you just need to send Ed a request to join. I was talking to Kelly. This actually was Mark's ideas. He and I have been emailing back and forth, is to start up a similar forum on the civil side. And Kelly and I talked about that yesterday and think that that's a pretty good idea. And so he's going to talk a little bit more about it at your meeting tonight. I'm not going to be able to attend. Our keynote speaker for tomorrow morning is arriving, and she wanted to go out to dinner. Mark just left. I would invite him, but Kelly's going to talk a little bit more about that and what some of the thoughts are. Donna, with her informed trauma response protocol, we're really excited. Uniform PD is asked to join in on the protocol and the study with West Valley City. And so we're excited about that. I've highlighted the date, January 6th of 2015.
It's Donna, actually January 7th.
7th, okay, I apologize.
It'll be here 6th and 7th, but the 6th is just going to meet with us.
Okay,
do you want to, 7th is the thing.
Do you want to explain a little bit about what that is?
Rebecca Campbell is probably the leading researcher in the country on trauma and the criminal justice system. And she's been working with law enforcement in the state of Michigan. Detroit has had some huge problems, and so she's been working with them. But anyway, she is the major researcher in the country and has had a huge impact on the legal response because of trauma. And she has agreed to come to Utah She was booked through, actually, this is interesting, she was booked through 2016, but when we called her, she said, because you're doing so many great things with this trauma stuff in Utah, I want to come to Utah, I want to see what you're doing and be a part of that. So she's coming, and it's going to be free, because West Valley City is paying her fee and all of her expenses. They're paying for her to come. So it's going to be free to any cop, any prosecutor, anybody who's interested, really, victim advocates. And she's going to be here for a whole day, January 7th. And I'm very, very, very excited. One of my goals is to get as many potential expert witnesses there as I can that can be a resource for prosecutors to testify on trauma and all of that. So between now and January, I'm going to be calling a lot of folks, inviting them to come if they're a potential expert witness for us, and they can come to the training for free.
Is part of it to explain why victims act in counterintuitive ways?
The trauma, the focus of the trauma presentation that she does is her research with victims and explaining their memory, explaining their behavior.
Could you get that notice out to all the MDTs in the state? Because we all have healthcare and mental health professionals on our teams as well.
Okay.
I'd like to have them there if we can as well.
I mean, we have it, the West Valley City Cultural Center is where it's going to be. So that is a venue that will hold up to 500 people. And we're hoping to get, a couple hundred people there to hear her, because she's phenomenal, and if you go to her presentations, it will have a huge impact on.
Is that a presentation we're going to be able to record as well and pass to our MDTs or not?
We have a conference call scheduled with her coming up, so I'll ask that. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I'll ask her about that.
Yeah, that was the same question I had, is just to maximize.
I think it's going to be fine. She has webinars on the internet,
right?
On the National Institute of Justice website, she has webinars about this trauma information. So she's been very anxious to get the information out. But she's going to, the day before, she's going to meet with us about the West Valley City Protocol. A small group of us that have been working on this protocol, and she's going to go over it with us, and because the National Institute of Justice is studying what we're doing, so she's going to be doing that the day before. She's going to meet with us about our protocol and talk to us about, any changes she suggests or what she likes and doesn't like about the protocol. We've already sent her the preliminary, the working draft of the protocol, and she has looked at it and was very complimentary about the protocol that we're using. But we're going to meet with her and talk to her about how it's going and how the research is going. What we're doing with the protocol is we're having the officers did a survey before they started the protocol so that we can compare a year from now. We're going to do the same survey with them about how they feel about these cases and what they've learned after the protocol is done. We're also doing a survey of the victims immediately after they're interviewed with this new protocol to see, things like, how did you feel about this interview? Were you able to tell the whole story? All of that kind of stuff. So, and the study's going to end next May. But I'm very excited that she's going to come here, because she will be able to give the National Institute of Justice stamp of approval on our project of what we're doing.
Yeah, no, with this protocol, we're getting some really good attention nationwide, and it's just really great. And so what Don and I were talking about, she just told me this week, is what we're thinking is she talked about potential expert witnesses, is that we have her come, and either before or after she speaks, we could, get our great trainers, bring them in from around the state to train the advocates and the cops and the mental health experts as to how do you testify as an expert, what types of questions will you be asked, you know, maybe do some cross-examination, but use this as a way to develop this pool of experts. So, you know, we're really grateful to West Valley City that they're footing the bill, but we think that we can, you know, capitalize on this to establish this pool of experts. Don is also working with Blake Nakamura at the DA's office on this, the child expert witnesses as well.
Well, it's both. It's child expert witnesses
forensic
and child interviewing, but
yeah.
Also my interest is we're trying to join forces. He's interested in developing more experts that can testify about child cases, and my interest is in developing experts that can talk about trauma generally, and especially in sexual assault and domestic violence cases. And so we've been working together to try to develop a bigger pool. And we met yesterday.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be making a lot of her phone calls and sending a lot of invitations for folks around the state. If you have anyone specifically that you want us to invite, you know, please let me know.
And
that you think would benefit from this and would be able to testify in your cases.
And we'll get all of this out to you in an email. You know.
Yeah.
I really think if even if prosecution counsel had to spend some money to get the rights to record this and pass it on to our MDTs and to our local agencies, I think it would be worth it. The trauma issue with domestic violence victims is something that's really counterintuitive to most people.
Right.
I think,
especially,
you know,
juries.
Yeah. Well, juries, but even our investigators. I mean,
yeah.
Especially for those of us who work in a small town where your investigators have been there for the last 25 years, it's counterintuitive to them. They don't understand this. And so when they see somebody who's not willing or who has this traumatic experience, they don't understand, they don't know how to deal with it. And they don't investigate properly.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we tell them, you still investigate everything, they need to hear it and understand it.
Mm-hmm.
In order to really be good investigators, to do their jobs right. And something like this, I think, would benefit everybody, but especially the smaller communities around the state. And we have a lot of small communities in the state.
Right.
And this right here is, you know, what they call the big city, you know, response that the small communities don't have.
Would it be helpful if we could set up a live feed as well, you know, for the smaller jurisdictions?
Yeah, I mean for example, for us on that day, the Wednesday, that's our MDT meeting day, the first Wednesday of every month. You know, we can just say, hey, we're going to set this up. We have great facilities at our CJC. We're going to live feed it all day long at our CJC, and it would make it really easy for our officers, for our healthcare professionals who work there all day long to come in and watch.
Mm-hmm.
It would be great.
Okay. So Don and I will work on that, since, you know, we might be able to get Jeff from Post to come in and do that, but that's something that we'll work on. I've been talking about our motion bank for a long time, but we're finally almost to the point where I'll be able to publish our first motion, and it is on admitting experts in these types of cases and the counterintuitive behavior. Donna made some final edits and some suggestions, and so we are incorporating that, and so hopefully in the next week or so we'll be able to put out our first motion and our motion bank and then start to accumulate some other motions and include that, but we'll get that motion out. Also this month we have our best practices working group conference over in Denver on the 29th and 30th. Remember last time we decided to send Mark Thomas and Ryan Robinson over. I decided that talking with Chris Hammond, who was at my annual training, that's something that I probably need to be involved with as well. So I built that into the budget. I didn't go to the National District Attorneys Conference, and so I budgeted that money to go to this best practices conference, so the three of us will be attending. Just briefly, as I've got some more information, what it is this is funding from the Department of Justice to develop best practices committees across the state, across the country. And so what Chris is doing, and she'll be our, as I said, she's our keynote speaker tomorrow morning, is just talking about within the state developing these types of committees. And obviously that's gonna come through the council ultimately. There will be five states that are in attendance. Ours is the first of these regional conferences that she has set up. So it'll be us, Idaho, Texas, California, and Colorado. And she's excited. We're meeting in the Supreme Court's conference room, so, you know, if that, you know, is exciting to people. But the agenda, she said it's still pretty loose. We're going to go over what each of the states are doing. Obviously, Utah doesn't have anything specific. You know, we'll just be talking about what our goals are. And then you can see what each of the states are going to present on there. California, they had a, their legislature adopted a requirement that the judges give a fairly onerous Brady instruction to juries. Idaho and Colorado, they're going to talk about exonerations and wrongful convictions. Texas, how their exonerations are being used to get some new legislation passed. And so what I'm going to do is talk about Donna's informed trauma response protocol, as well as the DNA working group that she's working on, and some proposed legislation that will require that every sexual assault kit, every DNA kit be processed by the state lab or tested by the state lab. And then she's going to just want to talk about, you know, where we go from here and there. And so at the next council meeting, we'll certainly have an update on what was discussed and where we're at on that. I mentioned previously I'm wanting to go back and revisit UPC's policy. So just here, you know, just some of the thoughts. This isn't certainly comprehensive. Just need to address, you know, the status of the employees when the statute, actually my next topic is amending the statute. So maybe I'll just talk about both of them at the same time. Is my law clerk is doing some research into what the legislative history was, why we came, you know, how UPC came about, why did it come about, some of the provisions, as Jan brought up. You know, the statute provides for 4 county attorneys, 2 city attorneys, that the city attorneys or the city prosecutor, the prosecutors that are on the council are supposed to be appointed by the I just lost my train of thought. They're appointed by UMAA. Okay, that's the civil side. Why are they appointing prosecutors? I talked to Paul. What he suggested is, what he remembers is the reason that UMAA appoints the prosecutor is so that the city attorney knows if his prosecutor's leaving the city, and all that's fine and well. Just needing to, you know, clean some of that up. The biggest thing that I need to address, well, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. Like I said, let me go back. So I'm just going to be rewriting, revamping, updating the policy. One of the things that we need to talk about is our resource prosecutors. The time that UPC came into being, you know, there was no contemplation of that. There's no mention of, you know, resource prosecutors in the statute. It just talks about the director. And so I want to put in there, you know, our resource prosecutors, are they going to be second? Can they second chair? Are they simply resource prosecutors? We've actually had requests to Donna a couple of times that she actually take over the handling of a case, which she just, you know, her grant wouldn't pay for that. She doesn't have time for that. And so want to address some of those issues. And it'll just be a work in progress. And so I'll have something for the board at our next meeting. Okay, so then to the statute, L paragraph 2, just some of the things that need to be cleared up. Is the unusual expenses, the statute talks about that there's unusual expenses that are available, you know, if we have the budget. You know, we just haven't had the budget by year's end. It's always built into the budget, and I built that into the budget this year. But by year's end, there really is no money. And so wanted to get the council's thoughts on that. Is that something that should be left in the statute? Or do we want to take that out and put that into the policy, that if there's unusual, you know, prosecution needs or unusual expenses, that they can come to the council? Anybody have any thoughts on that?
I don't think we can do it if it's not in the statute.
Okay.
So I'd leave it in the statute, okay, with the understanding that we don't, if we don't have the money, we don't do it, but if we have the money as a need, then it's there.
Okay.
Are counties taking advantage of that and making requests?
No, I think just because, you know, you all know that everybody's tight, and, you know, the majority of the council either sit, you know, or the county attorneys sit here on swap, and so no. So the answer is no, we haven't had any of those requests. Because
I get that letter, but it doesn't seem to apply to anything that we do. You know, we have our own budgets and we pay for what we do.
So there's been a few requests the last couple of years and there's been no funds, and so we've just voted to not issue any money on that.
Right.
I think without that in the statute, I don't think the state
would allow us, okay, that's,
to give money to the county or anyone else.
Okay, and that's good to know. I'm still, this is still pretty new to me, so I didn't even think of that, so, okay. What I will throw out, having been a former city guy, not that I'm advocating a city's position here, is I know the cities might be, imagine if this were opened up to allow cities to make this request, I would see more, but I don't know that
have
we want to
passed?
Do that. Well, no, they haven't because they're not eligible. We've just limited it to counties, at least that's been my understanding. I mean, because an example that came out of Warm 2 years ago is we had a doctor who got two DUIs within about 6 weeks of each other, and both times had a what was the drug that Michael Jackson died from? Phenobarbital? Or whatever that was. He actually had one time he had a needle in his arm with the bottles in the car, and then the second time just had the bottles in the car, but we couldn't afford to have it tested because we had to, well, we paid to have it tested, we had to send it back to a lab, but you know, it would have cost the city thousands of dollars to bring out the expert in this DUI, and so we ended up giving him a reckless driving and having to dismiss one because we just didn't have the funds. And I only say that just, you know, let's say we get really flush some years and we start having a lot of this extra money, is at some point, you know, we may get requests from the cities to look at that, but at this point it's a moot point. But I'll leave it in the statute because I didn't even think about that. Okay, so then this leads to,
How
sorry.
How does the statute, does it just limit it to counties?
I'd have to go back and look at the language, but I don't know that it says that in the statute. Let me look at it, I'll look it up on the break and I'll let you know, but I know that's... Right, but that's, was it a policy? Did you and I talk about that at one point, or was that Mark and I?
That was probably you and Mark.
Okay, let me look that up and I'll clarify that. But I know that's what Mark had told me, that it was limited just to the counties. Okay, the council composition is, so like I said, Jan brought this up, is right now it's four county attorneys. In talking with, or actually let me, I'm getting ahead of myself, is, so the prosecutors is, I've had from Padma, I'll just, you know, she wouldn't mind me saying this, is she has mentioned this to me a couple of times, because the justice courts, the misdemeanor courts are generating the vast amount of the surcharge, which when you look at the numbers, they really are, is shouldn't they have a greater voice on the council? That's for the council to decide, but that's one of the issues that I'm having my law clerk look at, is to see if there's any explanation as to why you know, it was a 4-2. When I asked Paul about it, he said he couldn't remember. He just thought that, you know, since the counties geographically represent a larger area, that's why there's four county representatives as opposed to two prosecutors. But I don't have the answer to that. So, like I said, at next council meeting, I'll let you know and we can discuss. Let's see. Talked about UMA, UMAA, I'm going to leave that in. And then the director's responsibilities, this is the most glaring one. Subparagraph 7 of that statute, there's a language there that the director is going to screen all requests addressed to any specialized investigative blah, blah, blah regarding, you know, child abuse offenses. I'm trying to find out why that was put in there. I don't have any expertise in child abuse cases, and I don't think that you all want me screening child abuse cases. And so that's going to be one that we'll probably delete. But again, next council meeting, hopefully I'll have an answer why that was in there and see how you feel about it. But I'm just not sure why that's in there.
Bob,
yeah.
To the extent that you need to work legislatively, so that I can help with that process.
Perfect. Thanks. Okay. Any questions then on the policy or the statute, where I'm going with that, what we're looking at?
You get some changes, you're going to send us drafts.
Yes. Oh, of course. Yeah. Okay. A while back, we'd sent you out a proposed logo. Looking back, it probably wasn't such a great logo. Why are we changing the logo? We're not really dominating to change it. We're trying to just kind of maybe freshen it up. So I've given you what we're kind of proposing as a new logo, which basically is our old logo. We've just put it in a circle. We put the Utah Prosecution Council across the top and then serving prosecutors since 1990 underneath. So it's basically our old logo, just with a new look.
Exhibit D.
Thank you, Marilyn. Exhibit D. Mm-hmm.
Just on the colors, some of the yellow color doesn't show up very well on lots of media, depending on what your background is. So we may want to pay some attention to that, or maybe change the color depending on what it's being printed on.
Okay.
just as a thought from my point of view.
And that's good to know. Yeah. But so depending upon, but is the format, is that something that sits better with you all? I realize looking back now what we came up with was maybe a little too progressive and didn't quite get our message across.
Well, we didn't have a professional design it.
Well, I
and
mean,
put it, something together real quick when Mark said, we need a logo. And I said, how about this?
Okay. Okay.
So that's where it came from.
Oh, okay. Well, then we're just going from there. Yeah, we're not, certainly not professionals either. Marilyn and I just used presentations to do this, but can I get, this one probably needs to be by motion. Can I get a motion if to whether or not to accept this or to keep working or just keep what we've got?
I'd like to see some different colors.
Yeah, I okay. like the...
Do the format.
Yeah.
Do we want just a thought? And I don't know. We have a lot of creative people throughout many of the offices. Do we want to throw it out there for a competition to come up with a logo? We have this already,
right?
Which I think everybody's fine with.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to look at the colors and things like that. Some people want you red. Some people want you know blue for BYU. I don't know.
Right.
But you know.
That would be great.
At least that way there's some input from other people and sorry, I'm not the most creative person in the world. It doesn't bother me what a logo is, to be honest with you. So
okay. Just to let you know, is initially I was feeling kind of rushed because we were trying to get some swag purchased for this conference, and so we needed to decide on a logo. But now that that's passed, is we have the time. And so I like that. You know, if we want to do that. So is that the motion, is to make a contest out of it?
I would move to do that. I think it would be interesting to see what we get. I don't know what we could offer for a prize or a
free shirt.
Free registration to a conference. I don't know.
Okay. Okay.
On your 1990, it's a little off. Filter to the zero is just so you know before you submit that.
Right, and yeah, and actually it looks too smiley face for me, but yeah, I was hoping that I could then get with somebody more a little more professional to tweak it. Okay.
You're making me feel bad now.
You did a great job, Marilyn.
Okay. Okay, so that's what we'll do with the logo. The newsletter, just so you're all aware, is we're wanting to freshen up a little bit, making it look a little more professional. I want to start including best practices articles from Chris Hammond. I get every week probably 8 to 10 articles, and they're just news articles from around the country, you know, ethics, Fourth Amendment. I started sending them out, but I don't want to burden everybody with email, so I think I'm going to just look through and try to pick the really good ones to include in the monthly newsletter. Do we want to include some guest articles, what's happening around the state, solicit ideas from different offices, you know, what's working for you, what's not working for you, just to make it more than just a summary of the cases that have come out. How do y'all feel about that? What's the council's feeling? Is that a direction that I should go with? Any thoughts on the newsletter? Has it been helpful? Is it, what can you tell me?
I like the best practices.
Okay.
I don't agree with them.
Yeah.
Not all of them, I mean, some of them.
Right. And some of them are more, you know, as well as, okay, this is what got somebody else in trouble.
Yeah, don't do this.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so with that said, is I may go without publishing in September, try to get a new look. That's, I don't want to do that, but I will, you know, send out an email if that's going to be the case. And as always, you know, if you think of something later, please send it to me. Okay, so the surcharge. I said it's been down the last 2 months, and it has been down, but when I look back and compared with it last year, which you'll see as we get into the budget, that it's right around what it was last year, but the reason that I have it is its own separate topic is I just wanted to see if, you know, have a discussion. Does UPC play a role at all in addressing why the surcharge keeps going down? You know, we've, either talked about it in this group, or I know I have my feelings. You know, again, our judges in 4th District and in our Justice Court were giving more community service, less fines, we're terminating probation.